The founders forgot that we had medical liberty.
We seem to be losing by taking the side of the middle. And we seem to constantly be losing.
I think Trump has made some kind of arrangements with Russia.
This person has made the allegations that they were a man.
If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There's no second best crypto asset.
Let's talk about science.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF, because in a time when everybody was attacking me, when Sargon doxed me and smeared me, you were the only one who gave me a platform, and you were very kind in helping me put the truth out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Jeff G Tonight. Roddy Lessard says, great title. Well, thank you. It's from someone on the Discord who was marking the breakfast question. And in the case of Jordan Peterson, when you ask him, if you hadn't eaten breakfast this morning, how would you feel? He doesn't do the usual deflection. He does the, what do you mean, breakfast? I mean, breakfast can be so many things. Breakfast can be had at so many different hours. The other day, I went to Tim Hortons and got a breakfast at 2 p.m. Gen X Catholic says, I am the regular chat. Well, you will have to share this burden with other people. This morning, I woke up early to stick by my principle that I always accept invitations, I always engage with anyone, but the interviewer was so incompetent that I had to say, fuck off, I can't do this. He wanted to do an interview, and I was like, okay, it looks like this is a very small podcast, it's not worth it. But I have the principle that anyone can interview me or debate me at any time. I don't want to become like Jordan Peterson on this intellectual credit card. I want to be faced by everything. But this guy, it's like, he tells me, I'm going to call you. I'm going to do a Twitter call. And it's like, bro, Twitter calls aren't a good way to stream. It forced people to be on their phone. I'm not going to be on my phone. And I told him, I recommend you use something like StreamYard. So I'm going to connect with my good audio. I'm not going to appear to my own fans. Bring my own fans to your YouTube channel so they can hear my voice in a lesser audio. And in the end, he at the time of the interview, although he had told me he would check into StreamYard and he had a StreamYard account, he calls me on Twitter. And it's like, it rings on my phone, but it doesn't ring on my computer. And I'm like, don't you have a link so that I can connect to you? No, it doesn't have a link. Look, if you're a fucking teenager with just a phone, you don't even have a desktop computer, don't start a podcast. Start by going out there. It's not worth listening to what you have to say. If you can't afford a desktop computer, you are absolutely unhelpful to everyone, and anyone who would spend a minute listening to you is losing their time. Get a fucking desktop computer and get a free account at StreamYard or something. Discord, anything. I can connect through many means, all of the standard means for streaming. But I'm not going to do an interview by phone because you're too poor. Rodila Sid says, but metaphorically speaking, what is breakfast? For one can be supper for another. So has anyone really ever had breakfast? All right. Bruto says, nothing of value was lost. JF, you need a megaphone to hear anything on his videos. Oh yeah, he went into doing a schizo video for 1 hour where he speaks in a mic that seems to be somewhere else in the room. It's like, bro, your mic is on the other side of the room. And so for 1 hour, he's like, oh yeah, JF didn't come, bro. He totally pussed out. And for 1 hour, he just doesn't entertain the crowd. He came to our Discord to try to insult me. I don't puss out, but you have to give me a fucking link. I'm not going to speak to the world through lower quality audio just because you're incompetent. Frog Eyes says, JF, can you do an interview on my podcast? We can communicate via smoke signal. Okay, no, I refuse. Smoke signals. The White House puts Keir Starmer on notice over the Lucy Connolly case. The Trump administration has officially stepped in, confirming it is now monitoring the UK government over the jailing of a British mother for a social media post. We are concerned about infringement on freedom of expression, says the US State Department. I don't know that America can stand and defend free speech across the world. I think it's a good news that they're trying, but the world is falling. A greatest whitest snort, by the way, who reminded me that he is a $100 subscribe star supporter. Much respect to greatest whitest snort. He has been holding the show on his shoulders with his subscribe star donation. And of course, he is he deserves oral credit from me for doing this amazing thing that is getting into the $100 level supporter. You can all thank Greatest Whitest Snort for sustaining this show. And I'll be working on including him also, a thank for him in the outro credits. Unfortunately, the outro credits, I refresh them every 3-4 months, so I'll try to do this week. Dropside says, Hamas and US reach Gaza ceasefire understanding. Israel rejects it. US envoy publicly blames Hamas. Overnight, Hamas and US officials reached a verbal understanding. So basically, it's a 70-day ceasefire in which Trump thanks Hamas, all cessation of Israel military operation, and there would be arrangement for food to come in and for the ceasefire to eventually extend after the 70 days. But we all know that Israel doesn't want this to happen. So you can have reached this verbal agreement with the envoys and all, but in the end, the boss of Trump, the boss of the US government, doesn't want this. So as long as they don't want it, it's going to be hard to make it happen in any way. Today we can review the Jordan Peterson appearance on the Jubilee. So Jordan Peterson has been appearing on the Jubilee, and this Jubilee series is very good because it gets a bunch of people to circle around a personality and to challenge them in some real way. And Jordan Peterson was challenged in some real way here. Let me try to refresh this video. Somehow the YouTube video has given up. So Jordan finds himself in front of 20 atheists. And Jordan, I've always said, these people, these pseudo-intellectuals that are out there that never get called out, that never put themselves in a circumstance where they could face a harsh review, opposition, they end up being lazy. And they're intellectually
self-employed in Canada?
See, this is what I'm always afraid when I refresh a YouTube video. Freaking ads showing up. Okay, so there we go. They are committing the sin of laziness, and it's not keeping their ability up. It is limiting their ability to improve and to test themselves. Back in the blood sports days, I've always been pushing for people to test themselves. Test yourself in front of big crowds. Have someone who's truly evil and wants to prove you wrong. That way, you're going to see the worst that you can. But these pseudo-intellectuals, they've not engaged in this at all. Magister Temple says, self-employed in Canada, right on the money, no? Lol. Oh yeah, I'm sure that YouTube has detected that somehow I'm self-employed and I need this ad. Dark of Malfoy says, Jeff, I sent some super chats on entropy. I couldn't get through Streamlabs. Would like to hear your answers. Okay, let's go address the... Because entropy is not my official platform anymore, but I can still log back in to go check your super chats. Let's get them out of the way. before we... Well, all I see on my... maybe you've done it on an old YouTube channel. Did you... What did you give it in? Because I see... Okay, those super chats are from 10 days ago, but it's you. It's Draco Malfoy. Okay, so even if they're from 10 days ago, I can read it now. So he says, he sent 5 super chats. He says, Jeff, I've been a big fan since the days of the public space. I normally just lurk, but you have been on fire recently, especially regarding Jordan Peterson and Shiloh Hendricks. Merci pour tout, mon ami. Well, thank you. Why don't you do more French language content? Are you more comfortable in English or French? Your English pronunciation is famously bad. And I see you sometimes looking for a word you can't find in English, despite English has more words than other languages. Well, the main reason why I decided to practice mostly in English is that there is a bigger crowd to talk to. Since I'm a YouTuber or a streamer of the edge of society, I already have a very, very small percentage of people who would listen to me. And so on top of it, I cannot afford being an edgy Frenchman. I cannot just be, reducing my audience, because if you reduce my audience to the point where, okay, maybe 1% of the global population is open to listen to what I have to say, if on top of it you select only the subsection of the French people within that 1%, it becomes unviable. So I work in English mostly because there's more English listeners. Now, I don't think my English pronunciation is famously bad. I think that, let me tell you, I think that the average noob streamer, like I've seen this morning with this teenager, the average streamer right now on YouTube, you would have more difficulty, and born as an Englishman or born as an American, you would have more difficulty listening to them than you do JF. But I don't think my English is that bad. Of course, I do have a signature accent, but I think I'm very understandable for the average English listener. And when you say I look for some word in English, I do. It's normal in a second language. But let me tell you, I go to speak in French every 2 weeks with Yann Rushdie. And I look for words in French much more than I do in English. Let me tell you, I have lost the habit of talking philosophically in French. So in French, I can talk on the everyday in family life. But if I'm trying to make a complex point, English is more natural for me now. He says also, what is the superior language for science or computing, English or French? By the way, I tried to do a Streamlabs super chat, but it was immensely complicated and I gave up. Désolé, je suis un homme sans patience. A stat is going around that 10% of all women aged 18 to 24 use OnlyFans. Also, can you discuss lowering sperm counts? I recently got tested and I'm still fertile, but not high as I thought. It is really falling. So I think English is better for the sciences, for math. In fact, when I do math, I think in English. When I do my math proofs, my attempt at developing math proofs, I do it in English. yes, there is about 10% of young women who use OnlyFans. Many of them will not derive much income. It's not a way to make much money. And as far as your fertility and the lowering sperm count, it's happening across society. We don't know the causes. I think feminization of society, you know, the pursuit against male may be one thing, because there is so much hammering of testosterone through all behaviors, culture, professors, elementary school teachers. I think we may be losing males that way. And does JF hate animals? Scientists experiment on monkeys, and now you make a video game where you murder animals. I'm just asking. No, I love animals, and I've always loved my monkeys when I was working with them. I always defended them fiercely. Let me take a 10-second break, so I'll be back. All right, I am back. Thank you for your super chats, Draco Malfoy. Roof Sternwood says, Big Max is under leadership review post-election. I have suggested JF as a superior communicator. If PPC is not edgy enough, Travis from Saskatchewan is trying to get the CNP re-registered. Yeah, I remember Travis. We had him on the public space back in the days. All right, so let's get started. Let's get started on the Jordan Peterson review. And I would like you to pay attention to one thing in this. It is the tendency of Jordan Peterson to be slimy. And I don't mean it in a personal way or insulting way, but to be philosophically slimy. That is the problem of Jordan Peterson. And we should open a WordPad. Does WordPad still exist? Word. I mean, do I have to open a new text file? Word. And how do I open this with WordPad? Because I think WordPad, well, seems like WordPad doesn't exist anymore. Wow, I am shocked. Well, okay, let's do it through Notepad, I guess. Let's open a Word slimy attitudes of Jordan Peterson. Now I'm gonna have to restrict my window. And these slimy attitudes are ways, they are fallacies to escape obligations in debate. And so you have a couple of those fallacies. You have equivocation. Two things meaning the same word, or two words to distinguish between same thing. So equivocation is, you play on the definition, you change your definition, goalpost move, you back on a definition, or you suddenly are not sure, or you don't want to say. Refusal to engage with hypotheticals. If I'm like, okay, I want to test, because the hypothetical in a debate is a way for one speaker to test the other. So I want you to lay it out. I want you to speak out. I want you to tell us what you have in your heart. So I will raise a hypothetical. Let's say you were in Nazi Germany and blah, 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 blah. Would you kill baby Hitler? Something like this. If you refuse to engage with a hypothetical, you are hiding. You are hiding, deceiving, obfuscating the state of your thoughts. And that's all that Jordan Peterson does. And that's why people who know about debate, we've always known, and we've said, I've said for years, that Jordan Peterson, if he was in a true environment of testing whether he even believes in what he says he does, he would be challenged. And this is exactly what we've seen with these 20 atheists. Now, I'm sad that this turned into an atheist versus Christian thing, because I believe that the wrongs of Jordan Peterson in this debate, in this engagement, are independent of whether you want to be a Christian or atheist. It really doesn't matter. But what I see on the public space is the atheists of the internet are like, oh yeah, he got owned, he got destroyed. And yet you have people like Andrew Wilson and other Christians who are like, oh, I don't know, I don't see it. I think we should, you shouldn't look at this as, oh, Christianity has lost. Because Jordan Peterson can't even say that he's Christian. So leave it, don't feel that you're on the team of Jordan Peterson because you're a Christian. You shouldn't be. Because he doesn't even self-identify as a Christian. He is more of an equivocator. He is more in the fallacy of equivocation than he is into Christianity, as you will see in this debate. And I would hope that we can leave Christianity versus atheism aside here, and that we can agree that philosophically, this was an improper debate performance. It was Jordan Peterson going in his old ways of, oh yeah, you don't know suffering, I know suffering, I know what belief is, you die for a belief. And it's like, wait a fucking minute. You are equivocating. We'll get to it, but he was equivocating between having a belief and wanting to die for it. We'll list this in our notepad as we go through. Let's get started. The Christian adjacent says deconstruct. The Christianity adjacent, Jordan Peterson. So he starts with his thesis in front of these atheists, which states the following: atheists reject God, but they don't understand what they're rejecting. So that is a very dirty attempt at reverting the burden of proof. It's unbelievable. This would get called out 10 years ago in atheist debates. You don't have to have a full description of the things on which you have no beliefs. Okay? Because these things are multiple and infinite. There is an infinite number of ponies in which I do not believe in. I do not believe in purple ponies. I do not believe in pink ponies. I do not believe in pinkish, purplish ponies. I do not believe in pinkish, purplish with yellow tail ponies. I do not have to understand the totality of all possible ponies to be an atheist of purple ponies. I simply have to adhere to principles of empiricism that tell me, well, if there's ever a purple pony, it will be shown to me, and perhaps it exists. I will be waiting for evidence, but until I see evidence, I am not a believer of purple ponies. And yet, look at what Jordan Peterson is doing in this reversal. Atheists reject God, but they don't understand what they're rejecting. First, an atheist doesn't necessarily reject God. An atheist can be atheist by the mere fact that they do not believe. They don't have a formed belief of the truth of God. They don't have the formed belief that the universe is supervised by an agentic system. That there is not a person above the universe that has created it and that has caused it. You don't have to have a fine understanding of all of the possibilities, because there's an infinite system of possible gods. Maybe there's a god that created this universe. Maybe there's a god that created gods. Maybe there's gods that are in charge of specific universe. Maybe a god is in charge of 500 rotations of a given universe in and out. You can imagine, and maybe there's a god that has underwear. Maybe some gods don't have underwear. You don't have to go there. Because in the digging of the infinite things that don't exist, it's a loss of your time. It's spam. It's the spam of non-existence. And at some point, you have to say, I am putting an Occam's razor in front of you, in front of your spam, and I will shave it away every time you bring it to me. I will not get into the details of what you think exists, but I have no proof for it. That is the atheistic belief. They don't have a responsibility, as Jordan claims, to understand what they are rejecting, because they're not even rejecting it in the affirmative. They don't have to. You can be, as Richard Dawkins lays it out, a level 6, level 7 agnostic atheist. That is, I don't have a formed belief, and until I'm given evidence, I will not form one.
God, but they don't understand what they're rejecting.
Good afternoon, Dr. Peterson.
How are you doing?
So this claim here that atheists don't know what they're rejecting. My background is in studying to become a traditional Catholic priest, daily mass, daily rosary, going on long retreats, deep into the magisterium and biblical hermeneutics, like I was thoroughly in it. And it seems like I do know what I'm missing. Is there something that I missed over years of study, both this issue formally and living out religion so deeply?
Well, that's kind of a weak argument, but it's okay in the circumstance because the question is weak. To begin that they don't understand, well, his argument is, hey, I am absolutely fit to understand. I'm as educated about Christianity as a Christian. In fact, perhaps more. So we're still within the ad hominem, you don't understand what you're doing. Kind of like instead of just saying you're wrong or you're right, you have a duty to understand what you're rejecting.
Well, you obviously feel that you missed something when you were practicing for the priesthood. Your aim was off then. So and there's so always the possibility that it's still off now.
What was off about my aim in the first place?
I don't know. That might take a long time to figure out. But
this is fascinating because Jordan Peterson is kind of exploring in new fallacies that are not even named. But this is what has happened right here. He is trying to attribute error without revealing error. Trying to see doubt. You see the sliminess of it? It's like, oh, well, maybe you don't know. Maybe you don't know what you know. You know, you didn't know then. Maybe you don't know now. Maybe you don't know anything. It's like this questioning of everything, which is technically correct. Yes, we can have doubt and we should all have doubt. But it doesn't matter because you should have doubt too, Jordan. I should have doubt. But here we are, two humans at equal standing on the scale of doubt. And yet you are pointing it without wanting to reveal it. The minute the guy asks, what could I be wrong about? I don't know. It would take years. It would take years to just get into your psychiatry, get into the belly of the beast. So absolutely equivocal attitude with trying to get your cake and eat it too. You cannot raise that the other should be doubtful in his current affairs if you don't point to the wrongness that he has. But Jordan Peterson does it.
Well, then it seems kind of like this no true Scotsman type of fallacy in which you're the arbiter of people's aims and how they understand the...
So that's not the right way to point it. It wasn't a no true Scotsman's fallacy. He was just trying to have an accusation without even revealing it. It's like, I have this secret accusation that you may be wrong about things you may think, but I'm not going to say what it is.
...those aims to be... How is it that you can claim that people don't know something that you know about their life despite not having met them?
Well, it's obviously a generic claim, just like mm-hmm. the atheist claim that there's no God yeah. is a generic claim. In your case, it would have to be specified more, and I'm not claiming to understand what was going on in your mind, but
yeah.
my experience mm-hmm. with atheists is twofold, is that they have a very reductive notion of what constitutes God, let's say mm-hmm. in the Judeo-Christian tradition.
But it's because to point to a disagreement, to affirm that something doesn't exist, you must have a pointed definition of it. Because if it is too broad, then it is not even graspable. If I say, oh, well, God is everything around us. Well, do I believe in everything around us? Yes. Okay, so I believe in God. So see, as long as you don't point to a specific, well, what Jordan Peterson calls reductionist, but it is not a reductionist approach at all to say God has certain features, and those are the features that I deny. An all-powerful thinking being, let's say. Well, that's pointed enough to deny. But if I start the hippie stuff, and God is everything around me, and God is the laws of physics, and God is love, and God is everywhere, then at some point it becomes irrelevant to be an atheist. At some point, if you're going to frame God as all these things, I'm going to have to admit that I believe in God, but I believe in a biased definition of God.
And they've often been hurt by someone who was religious or by the religious enterprise or perhaps by God.
So here he's talking about the particular subset of atheists that are frustrated at religion and they've been abused by the church or whatever. That's really not my kind, so I don't feel part of that group.
Himself, so to speak, and that's left him with an animus.
But I think that you have a reductive view of what atheism is. You've defined religion so broadly to include any sort of having aim in life, any sort of cultural archetypes, or having a metaphorical substrate. And atheism to you is a very specific type of like three people in the world that are these Raskolnikov type of, they want to get away with a perfect murder. It seems like you have the reductive view of what an atheist is.
Well, let's start.
This, again, you know, calling the other side reductionist doesn't lead to anything. Those are bad debate practices on both sides. So you have an equivocator, you need to pin him down. The guy should be trying to pin Jordan Peterson down on what he's really saying. Because if you're going to give a definition of God that is so broad that even someone who just sees physical reality has to admit its truth, then that's not a God to me, because that we already have a word for it. It's the physical reality.
With your claim.
I love Monday.com.
What's Monday.com?
You don't know Monday.com? This is Monday.
Mm-hmm. How do you define the God that you're rejecting? Like, what is God to you? You studied mm-hmm. in the church. You found that unsatisfactory. Mm-hmm. How would you characterize what you rejected?
I think the average Christian believer, when they say that they're Christian and they believe, they mean some sort of God that is all-powerful, all-perfect, is somehow involved in the matters of this world, and that we look to them through wisdom and with Logos incarnate in Christ. And it also seems like you don't believe in...
And that God is agentic. It has views. It has beliefs. It has... structure. It's an agent.
Religion in the way that the average Christian says that they believe in religion. And there are as many gods out there as there are believers, because everybody has mutually exclusive and different views of what God is. So it seems
well,
like...
Well, if everybody had mutually exclusive views of what God mm-hmm. is, no one could speak to each other. You're...
See, and here Jordan Peterson touches on a world of equivocation. But if you want to resolve this problem that people have different definitions of God, you have to give your own, and you have to show that it's particularly useful. Well, what Jordan Peterson needs to be pinned down on here is state your definition of God. And then this guy should go into the critique of, well, that is so broad as to not be useful. What is the function to take the God of the Bible that does A, B, C in the Bible and to mix it with your concept of self-help and you know, broad, whatever is good for you is God.
The mere fact of communication presumes a commonality of assumption and definition. And so, and it's certainly not the case that I regard any archetypal manifestation whatsoever as equally religious. So that's not a real claim. Let me give you an example. For example, there's a sub-narrative in the story of Moses where Moses...
And this is where it slides. We don't care about this story. It's not needed. Everything has been stated clearly. We don't need a metaphorical story.
Moses is rewarded with a glimpse of God. Okay, and that's one of the ways that God is characterized in the Old Testament stories.
Yes.
Now, Moses is a faithful servant of God and a good man. At least that's the case within the confines of the story.
One possible interpretation.
It's the case within the confines of the story, obviously.
We look at the Bible, the Bible can't precisely say anything because there are so many different exegetical and hermeneutic views of this particular book, and that everybody has disagreed historically on, it seems like, even the most benign detail about a book this big. And it seems like you can only say that.
So this guy is trying to make a doubt point, is trying to blur the lines the same way Jordan does. So I don't really like this guy. You can see that he comes from a religious tradition. There are so many ways to understand. It's not good because it's not pointed. If you had a counter to give him to the story in the Bible that he's talking about, if you had to talk about Moses and you could offer an alternative view than what Jordan is describing, then that might be relevant. But to do a general denial of, oh, you know, everything is loose in the Bible, all concepts could be questioned, could be understood in different ways, that's not pointed enough.
That the Bible says something if you first presuppose that it's univocal.
So your claim essentially is that Moses in the Old Testament plays the role of a villain or is irrelevant? Because the alternative claim is
that
he's good.
I'm saying that we can't know, because we can't talk to those authors.
If you...
And see, if this young man is particularly bad. And I'm very proud of the performance of overall of the speakers, but this one is bad. He falls for the, oh, well, we can't ever know the true meaning of the Bible because we can't trace back the authors. The intent of the author doesn't matter that much. You know, you can have a work of art that ends up communicating something even if the author wasn't fully conceiving of it. So it's very weak.
Are going to start with the presupposition that there's nothing I can say about any of these stories that you're not going to disagree with from the perspective that there are multiple potential competing claims, then I can't speak with you.
We also have a short time here, so I want to get to the core of what you're arguing here, and I'd love if we could...
The core
kind
of what
them.
I'm arguing is that atheists reject God, but they don't understand what they're rejecting. So I'm trying to give you an example of what's being rejected and its complexity. Okay, so God rewards Moses.
Atheism does not reject complexity. It rejects useless complexity. It rejects unproven complexity. It rejects there's some complexity behind this, but I won't show it to you.
Moses with a glimpse of the divine. So this is a definition of the God that atheists are hypothetically rejecting.
A possible one.
I said I didn't say...
Why... This debate would be so great if Jordan Peterson was the only one equivocating. But here you have this guy in the face of him, and he's equivocating as much as Jordan Peterson. Possibly. If you're not going to lead into a branch of argument in this, just let it go. You're possible.
Say the.
I know.
Said a.
That
right.
is possible, yes.
This is not a drink.
Holy
it's a drug.
Shit, a
Here's how it became
nightmare.
The most widely used drug on Earth and why we made...
Okay. So despite the fact that Moses is a stellar character and he's had a long and difficult life and can withstand a lot of difficulty and travail, God puts him between two cliffs so he can just see a crack of what's in front of him. And when God walks by, he allows him to see his back. Okay, so the implication... an implication of that story is that the divine is fundamentally unknowable. It's a pinnacle experience, and that people in their finitude have to be shielded from a comprehensive vision of the basis of reality.
And here we go. Let's note this in our list of obfuscation. God is unknowable. You need to be shielded. So this is Jordan Peterson's claim of the Christian view. So if God is unknowable and you need to be shielded from it, why is it a sin or a problem if the atheists don't understand what they are rejecting? Well, Jordan Peterson is doing an equivocation between seeing the truth of God and knowing it. In other words, to even know the concept of God, you have to accept its truth. You cannot have the false position on God, the position that is not true. Because if you reject it, you don't see through Moses' side mountains. You are obfuscated. Once the truth reveals itself to you, you believe in it. So that's an equivocation between the definition of God and God. Jordan Peterson is saying it will happen at the same time where you accept the truth and you'll know that definition. So in other words, only the believers in this concept that God is understand what God is. The others, they don't. And so he is equivocating between the position, the metaposition on is this true, and the Bayes position on what is this. Think about it. If I was to say the same thing about this pen, I would say, if you are rejecting the idea that this pen exists, you don't fully understand that pen. And once you have accepted the existence of this pen, you will fully realize the secret power of that pen. But only then, and only then will you truly know what a pen is. Until then, I refuse to engage with what a pen is and how you will know if you have such a pen in your own house. I refuse to define the feature that it should have.
Well, that's not the God that's defined in that manner, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a simple personification. It's not a simple old man in the sky. It's something that in its essence is unknowable and overwhelming.
So again, equivocation, defining something by what it is not. So it's not a guy in the sky. It's unknowable.
Overwhelming. And
it's overwhelming. Once you are in contact with even the definition of God, which will lead you to its straight acceptance, you will be so overwhelmed that you cannot communicate it. You cannot process it through your normal senses. It's going to be like an excitation. It doesn't qualify under rational analysis.
That isn't, in my experience, the God that's defined by atheists who are attempting to undermine the story. I mean, it's the same claim.
Oh, another definition by the negative. It's not what atheists are talking about. Well, we have a whole list of what God isn't, don't we?
For example, that you're a finite creature. Mm-hmm. And that you face something that in the final analysis is unknowable, and that you have to establish a relationship with it regardless of your inability to perceive or even withstand perceiving the whole.
So here Jordan Peterson's revealed the whole process of incomplete knowledge. You are finite. God is infinite. You need a relationship with the infinite. What does this set of things mean? That's what we call a smoke screen. He's telling you, you will have incomplete knowledge. You will not be able to verify God. So he's withdrawing God from the obligation of justification, of analysis, of understanding. So he is basically creating the philosophical framework of the smokescreen. This idea that because you are finite and God is infinite, you will have a relationship. That relationship will be limited. You won't be able to download the whole of God. So there will be unknown out there. That is preparing the view for an irrational view, an irrational acceptance of a concept that he can't define.
Okay, is there a problem with that?
I mean, the problem is that when we look at, famously, when you've been asked, do you believe in God? The question becomes, what do we mean by God? And in the Bible, it's not even clear the biblical authors know what God is, because Yahweh has historically emerged from an early storm god, a deity that doesn't exhaust the category of deity, and that has changed over the Old Testament. Does God have physicality? Does God not have physicality? It seems like, yes, if you define religion to mean anybody that has an aim, anybody that looks at the unknown, anybody who wants to go from chaos to order is inherently religious, then yes. But also in the same way, I could define atheist as somebody who doesn't dogmatically believe in a religion, or somebody who doesn't regularly attend religious services or belong to a denomination. Help, especially the audience, kind of like boil this down. There was a lot of words there. That the central claim is that we exist somewhere between the finite and the infinite.
A central claim
is that we exist somewhere between the finite and the infinite.
No, I said that we were finite and we had to establish a relationship with the infinite.
Yeah. Then
incompleteness.
In that case, then we're all religious, but then I can do the same thing and define one particular element of atheism. It seems like we both have a reductive view of what the other side looks like, to the point where a conversation seems incoherent, and not just incoherent, but not in the way that the average Christian understands Christianity to be.
Do you have a problem?
Let's pause there. Sorry, you've been voted out by the...
Yeah, this guy needed to be saved by the bell because he's trying to make a moral tie. Oh, well, it seems that we are both reductionists of the other view, and it's not the right way to go. You have to go above the melee and show that you're willing to be not as reductionist as he describes. Very bad debater here. And you could say that when the bell rang, he was like, oh, thank you. Thank you. I need to go now. Yeah, you need to go and leave your place to a more talented debater.
Majority?
As a business owner, are you paying yourself in the most tax-efficient way possible?
Hey, how's it going? Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you,
David.
David, good to see you.
Tell me everything that you know about the Polynesian deity Lono, L-O-N-O.
I don't know anything about the Polynesian deity Lono.
So you're rejecting something without knowledge of what you're rejecting.
Boom! This is exactly... This is so good. It's so simple. And we've heard it in atheist debates before. You're all... Every single Christian... By the way, Frog Eyes, I did install uBlock Origin. Now YouTube is detecting it and is forcing it out. You can get banned from YouTube even as a watcher of videos if you have uBlock Origin. Anyways, every single Christian is an atheist of Zeus. Every single Christian is fully agreeing with the atheist view about Zeus, about Lono, about all of the other gods that have been denied by the atheist. The only difference between an atheist and a Christian is one of the gods.
I'm not rejecting it.
Do you believe in Lono?
And so here, this guy would have been served well if he had pointed out, hey, there seems to be a moral obligation implied by your statement, Jordan, that we must understand something before we reject it. And I would have Jordan Peterson come on the record and say, yes, I think that's a problem, that you are not understanding something that you're rejecting. But here, Jordan Peterson starts to slime away. He just said, I do not reject. I didn't say I reject Lono. So, I do not reject Lono. That's a refusal to display his current belief on Lono. You don't? Do you have a belief on Lono? You said that you knew nothing about it. So tell us, does Lono exist?
I don't know anything.
Do you believe in Lono? Do you believe that he is a deity that exists in the world, exists in the universe, that exists in the...
If you don't believe in him, you are rejecting it. You are doing exactly what the atheists are doing with your God.
Existence of everything? Do you believe that Lono
is a deity? I'll answer that question once you answer my question, which is...
And this is such a low-level tactic of sliminess. Refusal to answer a question before opponent answers an unrelated and unnecessary question. The point stands on its own here. This guy doesn't have to answer any question for his point to be valid. This guy doesn't need any precision. He is using merely terms that have been introduced by Jordan, moral obligations that have been introduced by Jordan, and he has nothing needed to clarify. And Jordan is trying to slime away by, oh, I need you to answer one thing before.
Do I reject everything that I'm ignorant of?
This is where the debate tactic of this guy totally works. You just mirrored yourself, Jordan. That is also the answer we give you. Do I reject something that I've not thought about? Do I reject all of the possible gods that could possibly exist? Do I reject this purple pony that I haven't quite imagined yet? Do I reject everything that I refuse to develop a belief in the absence of evidence?
Because that's your presupposition that undergirds your argument, and unless you can prove that...
Mirror, Jordan, that's also your presupposition.
That's valid, then there's no point...
My question is quite simple.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean it's formulated accurately.
Do you believe that Lono exists?
Are you an atheist of Lono? This guy is very good. He's keeping it straight.
Yes or no?
That is the football approach, you know, when... The good debate, you stick to your point, you have your point, and it's a tight line, and you walk it, you carry the football, and you don't drift apart. This guy is very good. I love this guy.
I'm not going to answer that question for the reason.
Holy shit! I'm not going to answer that question. I'm not going to answer whether I believe... in Lono, because you know how bad it would make you look, because you know you're an atheist of Lono, because you know that any sin that you could attribute to the atheist, you're committing it with Lono. Like, take the bullet. I would say that in general, as a debater, what distinguishes me from many other people, take the fucking bullet. I don't care if an answer, if a question, a series of questions is made to make me look bad, I say, okay, yes, you know what? I'm a fucking atheist of Lono. This is what you'll hear from me in a debate that you'll never hear from almost any other person. I totally take the bullet. I know that your question is designed to make me look bad, but in this case, it's not merely making him look bad. It's disproving his entire line of attack with claim number one, that there is some sort of obligation to specify everything you don't believe in. What you're asking for is infinity, Jordan.
Since I just described, you already insisted that if I reject something, that if I'm ignorant of something, I reject it. Do you think that everyone in the world has to know everything simultaneously for that to be valid and true?
That mirrors very well. See, this is where... As a debater, if you can make it so that the other person is making your argument for you, that's beautiful. And that's it. Jordan Peterson is destroying his argument here. Just repeat what you said, Jordan, to an atheist. do I have to conceive of all possible gods and all of the possible sub-gods that could be allowed by your broad definition? Do I have to think about each of them to deny them one by one to be an atheist? An atheist is merely an absence of belief. I haven't developed a belief in a god because I haven't been given a good enough reason.
I think in order for your argument to be true, in order for it to be true that we atheists don't understand what we're rejecting, then you need to also apply that to yourself and to Christians and to Muslims and to any other person on this earth, where if you don't understand what you're rejecting the belief in, then you can't reject the belief in it. That's the implication of your claim.
I didn't say that I rejected the belief in Lona.
So Jordan is trying to say, I haven't used the word reject. But the problem with this is you are an atheist of Lono. You are an atheist of Lono in the very same sense, because I have never heard of Lono before this debate. I've always been an atheist of Lono, though, and I've discovered it during this debate. The minute this deity name was spouted out by the debater, I knew that I was an atheist of Lono, which I've been since my birth. Now, this is Jordan Peterson is trying to make space for himself in a position that doesn't exist. There's no position between I have no belief in Lono and I reject Lono. There's not enough difference here for Jordan Peterson to try to put himself right here. I have no belief in Lono. I reject Lono. I'm in between. The truth is in the middle. Now we're talking about, well, you haven't said you rejected it, but you effectively reject it. But by refusing to engage in all of the Lono deity recommended behaviors across your practice and your entire existence, you are effectively rejecting Lono. And by the way, you're explicitly rejecting it by Christianity standard anyway. Because Christianity calls you to reject alternative gods.
I didn't know who Lono was. I didn't say anything about rejecting.
That's because I've asked you several times and you haven't. But let me get to my even greater point.
Mm-hmm.
You're saying atheists don't understand what religion is or what God is in order to be able to reject it fully or completely. We have someone over here who studied it in their own way. I've studied religion. I have a degree in religious studies, specialty in Christianity and Mediterranean traditions. And further than that, beyond me, Pew Research studies suggest that atheists and agnostics actually know more about religion and about religious stories, the foundational principles, than believers.
Mm. That's because they're more religious than they think they are.
Okay.
The layers here. So now atheists in their rejection are more religious than they think they are. So now atheism is not the absence of religion. We have an equivocation on the term atheism. So was the atheist the person who rejects the existence of a physical god, or is atheism being not religious? Because now you can be atheist and be so atheist in your pursuit that you become a little bit religious. What are the definitions of these terms by which this triangle works? There are none.
Okay.
They're concerned with deep matters. And one of the defining characteristics of someone who's oriented in a religious direction is that they're concerned with deep matters.
Okay.
So now anyone who has a question that is deep becomes automatically religious.
Okay. In fact, it's virtually
more equivocation.
Definition.
Right, but they also...
And no, it is not the definition. Religions, as we speak of the difference between a religious mind and an atheist mind, is the belief in God, the belief in a moral objective code transferred by tradition.
I also have to identify with a religious tradition and accept the foundational stories that go along.
Well, that would mean more that they're sectarian than that they're religious. And most people, for example, in the United States, deny that they're religious, but accept it.
So now, if you are in a branch of religion, you are in a sect. So religion gets hippieism. That is no group. It's about the feeling. It's about the pursuit. Religion loses its social traditional sense.
That they're spiritual.
Okay, let's pause there. You've been voted out by the majority.
Control and domination. That's the goal of all power systems. They can be resisted.
Buy your shit.
Aha! Hi, nice to meet you.
How are you doing?
Good,
what's
how are
your
you?
Name?
I'm Greg. Nice to meet
Hi,
you.
Greg.
Okay, so I feel like you're getting at this idea of polysemy, where we have multiple related meanings for a word, right? Like,
well, he's not getting at the idea. He's practicing polysemy as a fallacy of the everyday that he commits. He commits in the every sentence, almost. We have shown here that he has different slimy definitions for religion, atheism, God, for his own state of belief. He's obfuscating on his own state of belief, refuses to reveal. One of his fundamental philosophical framework is the framework of the smokescreen, where you will end up with incomplete knowledge. I mean, this is more than words having multiple meanings. It is someone philosophically committed to the blurring between these meanings.
Like, for example, a famous painting can be emotionally moving in that it changes my emotional state. And when I was on the highway coming here to the studio, I was physically moving. I was changing my position. If I said, I believe the Mona Lisa is very moving, and you said, you don't really understand what you're saying, it's nailed to the wall, I would say that you're the one who doesn't understand what I'm saying, not the other way around. And the way that relates to this is there are many concepts of God, and I'll admit, I find a lot of what you say about that interesting. I'm familiar with it. The idea of this kind of Jungian hierarchical thing, or as a metaphor, or a symbol, or the kind of, you know, atheist, materialist, literalist idea of a agentic, omnipotent, omniscient being that intervenes in reality, right? So when I'm saying that I reject the concept of God, I'm aware of these other definitions of God, but I think that when we use words, we tend to only imply one meaning at a time. So the same way that I would say the Mona Lisa is moving emotionally, but I would not say it's moving physically, I would say I reject the concept of God in this very literal way. But
what literal way?
This is way too painful, but this guy is correct. Look, when an atheist says, I'm an atheist, they mean every definition of God I've been given up to now, I don't think they exist. I don't form a belief onto them. There are certainly possible definitions of God that I haven't thought about, but I have no reason to adopt them either.
The way that God is this omniscient, omnipotent, agentic, supernatural being that sent his son down and has, you know, caused miracles and all these things like that. The idea of God is like...
Do you think that there's an underlying unity of things?
Could you explain that question?
Well, scientists, for example, believe that science unifies in a comprehensive theory. Do you? Yes? No? Or that there are multiple competing truths? Those are the options.
Well, that is a complex question because there's the unification of our scientific theories, which kind of must be the case, because if you had two sciences that contradict, if biology was to find something that physics is impossible, well, then you'd have to adjust either physics or biology, or maybe you'd be wrong about your observations. Something would have to go. If we found a spider that's successful at creating a material that, like, physicists are telling you, well, according to our theory, this material is impossible. you would have either physics need to change its theory, or biology needs to change, or the spider doesn't exist and it was all fraud. This unification of the meta vision of humans over the universe is a unification within the domain of ideas. Does that mean that the reality out there has to be unified? Not necessarily. Although I don't see a problem with physical reality being unified under a... Let's say maybe there's one single principle underlying all of reality. Maybe, and when you awaken to it, maybe you understand the whole of the universe, how it underlies physics. We could be in a world, though, where there's no unity, where the laws of physics are varying, whether you're here or there, where there's no stability. But I think mostly we are in a stable world. I've not been given reasons by the universe to believe that we are not under a united reality. Consistent, analyzable, observable. Todd Criminal sends a super chat. He says, Jeff, have you ever heard of Matthew Adelstein / Bentham's Bulldog? He's a non-religious theist who debated Matt Dillahunty 2 days ago and absolutely destroyed him. No, I don't know about him. If Matt Dillahunty is getting destroyed, I always like to watch. So maybe I'll watch it. Sounds very interesting.
Either things unify or there are multiple competing truths.
I think that I know that, for example, like in physics.
It's not super interesting, this line of questioning, because no matter what the fundamental reality of the universe is, you would have an enormous burden to make the case that this is God, and you won't meet that burden. So as far as the question go of, does Jordan Peterson use sliding, moving definitions? That is the case.
People are looking for like a theory of everything.
And why do you think they're doing that?
It's interesting, it's helpful.
But they also believe that there's an underlying unity to things.
In a sense, yeah. Like the material world and time and space are probably governed by universal laws and principles.
Partly that, yes, yes. But that the same thing might extend to a broader domain that would include imagination and value.
Could you help me?
Well, of course, imagination and value are in our brain. Therefore, they are following physical laws.
Connect that to the prompt.
Well, I'm trying to define God, the God that I don't think atheists do a very good job of defining. Here's another question for you. What do you think guides you in your determination of whether or not...
And this is a little bit of obfuscation. I'm trying to define God. Atheist, not doing a good job. Well, that's absolutely reversal of the burden of proof. If you are the one believing in God, you shouldn't be trying to define it. By the time you have asserted your belief, you should have defined it. So you cannot be trying. If you're trying to define God, you don't fully believe in it yet because you don't even know what it is. You don't even have the capture of the entirety of the subject. As long as you're trying to define God, you have uncertainties around God. Atheists don't have, it's not their job to define a negative, to define what they don't believe in.
Not what you're saying to me is true.
This is Pod 5,
you
the first fully immersive
kidding.
Sleep system. Intelligent.
Pod 5. Adapt-
Can we go back? Can we stay on what we were talking about?
We are.
Okay.
You're just uncomfortable with the question.
No, I feel like you just...
And this is totally cheap from Jordan. This was not a troublesome question. It was not pushing him into a corner anyhow.
Kind of throwing different spaghetti at the wall.
I'm not.
Okay.
I asked you a very specific question. What is it that you think guides you when you're talking to me to help you determine whether what you say is true?
This guy takes way too long to answer. The answer is my brain is guiding me. My brain has evolved based on survival probabilities, etc.
Logic, memory, reasoning, sensory information.
How do you distinguish that from being governed by something that's false?
An interesting question.
How do you know the difference when you speak between what's true and what's false? So you can.
The answer is my brain is tuned toward the truth because it was naturally selected to trust, to seek the truth. Because when it wasn't seeking the truth, it got punished by bad decisions. And good decisions were easier to make if my model of the world was true. And so my model of the world that exists inside my brain has been optimized through evolution to most of the time seek and find the truth, but absolutely not all the time.
I could imagine.
I can infer.
From what principles?
So, what are you getting at?
I'm getting at the fact that your conscience guides you. Is that reasonable?
Conscience is defined by.
Okay, yes, conscience. My conscience and the way it's implemented by my brain guides my behavior.
My empathy and my reason are my foundational.
Define it any way you want.
Okay, so that's how I'm defining my conscience. Is my, you know, my kind of, my conscience is my.
So here, he's telling you, I'm about to say something super important. Super important about conscience. Define it however you like. That's just one more wink in the direction of Jordan Peterson's just carelessness with definitions. Like, if you're about to fundamentally frame your argument around this one term, it would be good to establish a common definition with your debater. But Jordan says, define it however you like.
Sense of, you know,
right
and wrong. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah,
where
yeah.
does that come from?
I would say that comes from an evolved capacity to empathize and a recognition of the benefits of engaging with and nurturing that capacity. And then that empathy is constrained and guided by reason, right? Like, for example, I am driving down the highway.
Doubting Thomas says, JF, can you explain why is JP critical of atheists if he won't himself commit to theism? I believe there's a syndrome here. I believe that there's a psychiatric kind of disorder that's probably affecting a lot of preachers. And I believe it's kind of the misguided let's call it the misguided shepherd. I believe that there is a point in human cognition where you don't know what's out there. But you kind of feel that people will find themselves if they can go out there. Like, imagine, I don't know if this mine has any gold in it. But I start saying, hey, guys, let's go to this mine. There's lots of gold. We should all go and dig in this mine. And I believe that across evolutionary times, humans have sent themselves in unknown directions through this mechanism, the misguided shepherd. The person who doesn't really know, but who acts like he knows so that he can convince more people to follow him. I believe that is what's happening here. You have a Jordan who's not even fully convinced himself of Christianity, but who's like, oh, there's some gold there. I have to send people there. And, you know, at any point in history, you may be sending people to their death or you may be sending people to truth. You don't know. That's the point of the misguided shepherd. The misguided shepherd, his job is to send the sheep. His job is not to understand where he's sending them.
Highway, there's a kitten in the road. I'm going to empathetically feel, oh, my God, I want to save the kitten. But then reasonably, like, I'm going to get hit by a car. Right, so that's sort of the process through which I make ethical decisions.
Okay, how do you
be constrained by reason?
Do you think that people can differ in their response to something empathically?
Yeah.
Is there a mediating principle that can tell you one person who's empathic and another person who's empathic that disagree who's correct?
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think that's where we'd have to, you know, talk it out, right? Mm-hmm. We do that in
The answer is whatever are the principles. They're the principles enacted by my brain, and I can spout out all sorts of justifications. We can get into deontological ethics, but in the end, I'm just that way. I'm just that way, in the same way that I like ice cream, vanilla flavor. I don't like chocolate flavor. And that's how I make decisions.
Real life all the time when we have, whether that's a discussion with a friend about the right thing to do in a situation, whether that's a policy discussion about law, right? That's where we can converse with each other, think about things, explain our perspectives, and then kind of reach a conclusion, right? That I think that we do that all the time.
So Elijah, the prophet Elijah, defined God in the Old Testament as the voice of conscience within.
Okay.
That's a definition.
So
now look at this. Have we not slid? Have we not slid from God is unknowable? You need to be, this is a truth so powerful. You need to be shielded from it. And you need to see it through a glimpse. Just a glimpse. That's all you're allowed. And your knowledge will be incomplete. You need to have a smoke screen between you, the finite being, and God, the infinite. And now, suddenly, God is conscience. And suddenly, God is conscience, and look at this. Define it however you like. I mean, literally, I have this. Okay, God is conscience, and 1 minute ago, Peterson said, define it however you like. Now I have a mechanism to get from God to whatever the fuck I want.
So you're saying by that definition of God, I guess this is kind of goes back to where I'm saying initially.
I'm not defining it. Elijah defined it.
And here we go. More equivocation. More equivocation. I'm not defining it. Elijah is. So now you're going to spam me with alternative definitions that you don't fully subscribe in, just to throw to my brain that I'm not sure what we're even talking about. This totally violates the rules of honest debate, which is why people have been critical of the young man who was impolite to Jordan Peterson. There's a degree of sliminess that you have to be impolite at some point.
As Elijah defines God.
It's defined that way in Jonah, too.
Okay, so as...
Cardinal Newman also defined it that way.
As I'm sure you know many people who've defined it that way. And it's impressive. You're a very knowledgeable person.
I'm not trying to be impressive. I'm just pointing out to you how God is defined in the Old Testament.
All right, so to respond to that, I do think there are lots of interesting ways to define God. And that goes back to my opening statement.
Then how
statement.
Do we specify what we're arguing about?
We use context clues, it goes back to my example of the moon.
We just state it. We say, hey, I want to say that I'm an atheist, and I've thought about definitions of God A, B, C. And maybe there's other definitions of God. I'm an atheist of them until I'm convinced of any of one.
Defining God as conscience.
Okay, so that's interesting, but then you're kind of expanding the meaning of God.
No, I'm not. That's how it's defined in the Old Testament, in Elijah and in Jonah.
Sure, so whoever... Yeah. So
now you're subscribing to the Elijah definition of God, or you're not?
Not whoever. Okay. Elijah is one of the major Old Testament prophets.
Right? Okay, so you recognize his authority and you accept it or not?
He's equal in stature to Moses.
Okay.
It's not arbitrary.
All right, so that is interesting, but it's not relevant to the context with which I am using the term God.
It's directly relevant. Atheists reject God, but they don't understand what they're rejecting. You accept conscience as a guide, and conscience is one of the defining characteristics of God in the Old Testament.
I think you're being...
So now you've accepted consciousness. You've accepted that you were... making decisions, like I like vanilla ice cream versus chocolate ice cream. You've accepted the Old Testament is defining conscience as God. Therefore, you accept God. And here, and you can also define it however you like. This is where a poor set of definition and a poor practice of pinning down your opponent in debate. You have to pin down. If you don't pin down, you're allowing him to slide across definitions that I don't define. Elijah does, and now I invoke his definition as an authority to eventually to end up saying to this guy, basically, if you have any beliefs about your behavior that guide your behavior, if you have anything going on in your brain when you choose to veer left instead of right, then you've accepted God.
Intellectually disingenuous.
In what way?
Because
again, I asked you if you believe that conscience guided you.
You just asked me a question and then you stopped me from answering it. In this setting, you understand the way I am using the term God and belief.
Not in the least. I don't understand how you're using it in the least. That's why I'm trying to define it. Yeah. My definition of God as conscience is a lot more precise and oriented than your definition of the God that you hypothetically disbelieve.
No, it is not, because there's already a word for it. Conscience. Conscience. Why did we ever need the word conscience to emerge? Why did we ever need this if it meant God all this time? And why is conscience associated with all these things at the individual level when the concept of God is precisely outside of the individual? Is precisely above and beyond the individual.
It's irrelevant to the fault lines of this debate.
How is it irrelevant?
Because in common parlance, when we're talking about atheists, God, belief, not belief,
we're
not
talking about...
Have you ever heard atheists say, I don't believe in conscience? I'm here because I don't believe in conscience, so I identify as an atheist. No, so you're sliding out to a definition that you're the only one to accept, and you're trying to criticize a bunch of people for using the same word which you just violated the definition of.
Common parlance. I'm trying to get to something fundamental.
So now you're going to ignore common parlance. But if you ignore common parlance, everything you say about what others have said is irrelevant. Because when an atheist goes out and says, I'm an atheist, it doesn't mean I don't believe in conscience. So if you want to attack their beliefs, you're going to have to stop ignoring common parlance and start touching what they meant when they said they were an atheist.
I think your point is irrelevant to the way that people
Which
tend to use
point?
These words. Your point that there are these polysemous
I didn't
ideas
make that
of God.
Point. You did.
I made a
specific point that
it,
God
right.
was associated with conscience.
I just feel like you kind of retreat into this semantic fog.
I'm not retreating at all. I'm advancing, sir. You are retreating.
Okay. All right.
So that's an ending on the form, but there was nothing fundamental philosophically there. The bell came and rang and saved both, and as they were insulting each other, not interesting.
It was very nice to meet you.
Nice
I appreciate
to meet you
the conversation.
Too. Yeah, it's very brave of you to do this.
Thank you.
My next claim is that morality.
So we're going to be headed toward the end of the show. I realize that now reviewing this full 1 hour podcast might take 3 shows. Because we've been going at it for about an hour and a half, and we're only through 18 minutes of the whole hour. So let's review claim 2, and then we're going to cut the show out, and I will continue this review tomorrow. It's just taking a long time, but I want every sentence to be addressed, because when we watch this content on YouTube and There's always a limit of time. There's always the fact that the debaters must rotate. That never lets anyone fully call out the falsehoods, fully call out what is it that I'm criticizing of Jordan here. And if it takes 6 hours, 8 hours for me to do it, 3 shows, I will do it. Because I think this needs to be called out. The fact that there is a sliding of definition that Jordan Peterson isn't even consistent about, that he refuses to engage with the stated definitions of others, those are not good practices for an intelligent debate. They will lead you to this kind of blurry, I discovered a gold mine there, you have to go dig it, I can't tell you exactly what's in there, but it looks like gold, but you'll never really see it. This is the position of Jordan Peterson with respect to God. Now let's listen to claim two, and then we'll be concluding.
Morality and purpose cannot be found within science.
Okay, so I guess that's what we will start by reviewing tomorrow. Of course, it's ridiculous to come with this claim without quoting it properly. This is the Hume distinction between morals and facts. It's true and it's correct. It's philosophically correct, but there's something wrong when you have to bring a point in that form and that way without even referencing the originator of it. And of course, he's trying to trap these atheists, and it's exactly, he will succeed because these atheists are too young and too stupid. But he's going to trap them into, oh, well, you know, morality can evolve from scientific concepts like evolution. And it's like, this, it doesn't even matter. You don't even have to bring this up. In the end, it's yes, science is not moral guidance. And it doesn't provide moral guidance. And if you want to extract moral guidance from science, you need to have pre-established, accepted axioms of morality. That's it. So there's no fact in the world that can ever tell you what is good or bad. There are facts that can guide you. The facts can guide you toward reaching something that you think is good or that you think is bad. And you may think it's good for you or bad for others. But the facts themselves will only show you a path of reality. They will never constitute an objective standard upon which to build your concept of good or bad. Antizog says one time he's talking about philosophy, then he's talking about Yahweh. We'll see true. What we've been having up to for these first 18 minutes in conclusion is a jump of definitions, an argument for unknowability, a smokescreen argument, an argument that you'll never know. And the minute you know, anyways, you'll be on our side. So, you know, never talk about the Fight Club. It makes me think about this sentence because you have to be in the Fight Club to experience the Fight Club. You never talk about the Fight Club to the outside world. But yeah, how is the Fight Club getting bigger if no one talks about it? It's the same thing. Jordan has basically a relationship with God that is inside his conscience. And the proper argument overall, after all that he's said, would be for me to sit with Jordan and say, what is the difference between God and hallucination? And I'm heartbroken that none of these young people have went there, because it's like, at this point, okay, so God is conscience. You can only experience it if you accept it. It's going to be just shown to you in a glimpse. As long as you don't fully commit to it, it emerges within your mind. I mean, let's go through just as a kind of concluding statement. This whole set of notes, as I was taking those notes, I didn't even realize, but the entirety of this applies to a schizophrenic with an hallucination. Like, well, okay, I saw the ghost in the wall, but you cannot know it. You need to be protected from what this ghost is telling me, but I can tell you a little bit about it. It's not really a ghost that's like this. It's not really a ghost that's like that. It's not really what you're talking about when you think of a ghost. I feel this ghost differently than you do. This ghost has enormous amounts of power. But I don't have the power. I need to interact with the ghost to really feel it and to extract some information from it. I'm not saying it's a real ghost. It's kind of at the intersection between real and not real. I reject your definition of ghost and the ghost that you've seen, but I've seen that one ghost that I've seen. And ultimately, that ghost exists in my mind. That ghost exists in my conscience. In fact, every time I make a decision, that ghost expresses itself. It kind of takes over my mind and leads me to take the left or take the right. It's inherently my choice. It is the same thing as what I choose. Because when I choose, it's the ghost choosing. The entirety of what Jordan has said about God applies to a ghost viewed by a schizophrenic.